And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. And this is now the Entrepreneurial Spirit, starring Leanne Hall and Craig Dean. Leanne and Craig, how are you guys?
Hey, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Dave.
Wow, you're looking great, Leanne. And
it's
so are you, Craig,
year.
But let's focus on Leanne. You're looking beautiful.
Right. Enough about me.
I have a new attitude.
Oh,
it's a song.
Oh, let's do our song. Do your song.
Oh, yeah, you have to do your song.
A one, a two, a
and
one,
a one, two,
two
three,
three, four.
Five.
I am woman, hear me roar, in numbers too big to ignore.
I love that, right?
Yes.
How about the other one, Delta Dawn?
Delta Dawn, what's that flower you have on? Could it be a faded rose from days gone by?
Wow, you guys are a duet. Wow, I'm impressed.
It's a new year.
That is good. So you're excited for 2011. You said you have a new attitude.
I do.
And what is this new attitude, do you think?
It's a can-do attitude, and it begins, you know, in my head. You saw a difference in me visually?
Yeah.
Okay. And it's not because my circumstances have changed, because they haven't.
But it's your the way you're thinking.
Yeah.
And we were talking about on the NLP show last half.
It all starts in your head.
It really does.
And ends in your head.
Yeah.
And people will respond to that. If you walk in a room and you're like, oh, my gosh, things are terrible, they're going to be so sorry to see you. See ya.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't want that. I've always said to my kids, bloom where you're planted. Well, I'm kind of planted right here, and I'm going to bloom, dadgummit.
And
dadgummit?
I've never heard of that. That's like that cartoon or something like
no,
that.
That was from
Silly Wappet? No, is that what it is?
No.
Silly Wappet?
Dadgummit. Isn't that Gomer Pyle?
Oh, on Andy and Mayberry.
Dadgummit.
Andy Griffith Show.
Dadgummit. Oh, I love that
dadgummit.
Show.
Dadgummit?
Dadgummit. No, no, no. It was Dadnabbit.
Yeah, that's right.
Dadnabbit.
It was the sheriff.
No, it was that.
Oh,
Dadnabbit.
Yeah.
Dadnabbit, the old guy.
Yes. On Andy and Mayberry?
Mm-mm.
Oh.
It was like Green Acres. No, it wasn't Green Acres.
Oh, yeah, Green Acres.
No, but it was some TV show.
It was.
Yeah. Gunsmoke.
Gunsmoke?
Oh, no, The Real McCoys.
The Real McCoys.
There we go.
Oh,
okay.
Walter or someone.
Walter Brennan.
Right.
I remember that.
So anyway, all that from a little dadgummit.
Well, I'm too young to remember that. Okay, just kidding.
So, Dave, do you believe in New Year's resolutions?
I believe in New Year's evolutions.
Ooh.
Oh.
Wow,
a sophisticated way of setting goals.
It's all about the words.
Yeah, evolution, because everyone sets resolutions, they set goals, but they don't change their behaviors, which support the goals.
See?
My contention, give me some knuckles.
Oh, yeah.
I forgot to do that. I forgot the blow-up part. But no, really, if you think about it, behaviors are what gets your goals. And if you don't change your behaviors, what good is it?
Because you can't change your goals.
Yeah, how are you going to change them? What do you think? You got excited over that.
I am.
And I think everybody deserves a chance to start over anew, which is why today's show, I think, is going to be very special.
Hey, it's biblical.
Well, it's biblical, but our guest today is a woman who will blow our minds away and talk about having an opportunity to start anew.
Yes.
Well, it's never too late.
No,
it's never.
Every day
is a new opportunity.
Well, isn't that kind of the theory of New Year's resolutions anyway, is that we can let the last year go and start fresh and start anew?
Okay, what's your New Year's evolution, Dave?
My New Year's evolution is to identify 4 behaviors a day, or maybe a week, that supports my higher level goals, and to identify 4 behaviors a week that have not been supportive of goals. So you got it two ways. You got new behaviors that you're going to need discipline, and you have old behaviors you want to transform because it doesn't seem to have supported high level goals with long term thinking.
Well, and the bad behaviors anyway, you have to replace them with something good, because you can't leave a void there.
That's right.
It's depressing. It's hard. It's too hard. It's temporary if you don't fill it.
My New Year's resolution is to let go.
Oh, I like that.
I have a tendency to want to see things a year in advance or 2 years in advance and hope that that's how they're going to be. But sometimes I can't control that, and that's kind of my difficulty in life. So I'm letting go this year.
Wow. So letting go of what?
Just letting
control.
Go. Yeah, control.
Oh, of control. Okay,
yeah,
that makes
controlling
sense.
My life.
Yeah.
As to the way I want to see it. So I'm just going to let things unravel.
And that will create, I bet, more peace in your life.
Yeah, I think so. I'm hoping so.
Yeah, because if you think about it, when you let go, there's sort of this relief, isn't it, that you don't have to hold up the whole world by yourself.
As long as you, again, if you're letting go and you don't have something, you talked about letting go of the behaviors that weren't productive. Letting go, as long as you have something to move you forward. You can't just let go and kind of go.
Well, there's a difference between letting go and giving up.
Yes.
Ah.
It's a major difference.
Yeah. Big difference.
For me, letting go is just going, and just letting life allow me to enter instead of me trying to open all those doors myself.
Okay, that makes sense. Maybe living in the present moment.
I was just going to, that's part of mine is living in the present. And that's the
you
same.
You guys are going to have sore knuckles by the time the show is done.
I love it though.
I want to live in the present and not be dependent on everybody else's behaviors, either towards me or around me either. I want to be able to just focus on letting go of expectations, holding any kind of grudges or anger, and just really live.
You know, tomorrow's the future, yesterday is the past, and today is the present. It's our present.
Yes.
A gift.
A gift.
You know, and I call it the three P's. Live in the present moment with passion and
that's
with
important.
A sense of purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So purpose, passion, present moment. How can you go wrong with that?
Say that fast three times, Dave.
Okay. Oh, my gosh.
Purpose, passion.
I can't even say that, even when I was reading it. Present, passion, purpose. Yeah. Okay, great. Craig? I can't even.
PPP.
Okay, good.
The three P's.
Yeah. But there I think that's good. I think people set too many outward goals versus state of being goals, because this is a state of being goal.
It is.
And we were talking about happiness as a choice. And if people learn that skill, they wouldn't have to be dependent on outside external circumstances or things to make them happy. They will be happy. And if you believe in the law of attraction, then that means if you're happy, you're going to be attracting happy events.
Well,
I think that that's one of the blessings of our economic condition right now, is that people were very, very dependent on things making them happy. And we've realized that those things really didn't
make us. Materialism of the world.
Did not. And we've had to let go.
Yeah.
And
that
find
is
our
a
happiness.
Blessing.
Yes.
A big blessing. Of course, a lot when you go through the pain. Well, they often say that you don't make changes. A lot of people won't make changes until you hit rock bottom. And then you realize that, wow, I hit the rock bottom. I need to do something different because it's not working any other way.
Yeah, don't you wish we could change before we hit bottom? So many of us really, we're not moved to do that until we get there.
Yeah, and it is possible, though, because in NLP they do talk about two motivating ways. One is pain will motivate people. The other is pleasure. So if people learn how to really tap into higher level values and what creates great pleasure for them, that will be motivating in itself. But
I think it's nicer to be motivated by pleasure.
Oh, I agree. Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, we had a very pleasurable week in between Christmas and New Year's. This, I'm sure, will come as no surprise to anybody. We played a lot of baseball.
Yeah, how did that go? How did Andy
do? Oh, my gosh, it was so cold, Dave.
Oh, it was? Oh, it was cold.
How cold was it?
I went through three bottles of propane, melted my comforter, because I would use it kind of like as a tent over the propane, so I'd huddle there, had blankets, had layers and layers. It was unbelievably cold.
Wow.
Never experienced any kind of playing in that kind of condition. I don't know how the boys did it, but it was amazing to watch them. It was awesome.
Did the games, any of them, get postponed because of rain?
Yeah, we played Monday and Tuesday and then didn't play Wednesday and Thursday, but we showed up out there each day and we'd wait in the rain or in the weather until they would call the game, because we couldn't not show up or leave because we would forfeit. We were undefeated until we seeded top. At Winter Nationals, out of all these teams from New Mexico, Colorado, Utah, California, these boys were the top seed.
That's
very exciting.
Great.
How do they get seeded top?
Because they won all of their seeding. We were undefeated in our seeding games, and it's based on how many runs you give up and how many runs you score.
So it's like the BCS. The more points you score, the higher you're seeded. BCS is the football.
Yeah. So that our team was the top seed, so that was pretty exciting. But because of all those delays, we ended up having to play three games on Friday, New Year's Eve.
Oh, three games.
We started at 10 in the morning, and we didn't finish till 6:45 Friday.
But how fun is that?
It was amazing. Craig came out there and watched a lot
of
them. And
I went through four cans of propane.
I thought you were going to say four cans or bottles or something else.
Well, that's what we call the drinks.
Oh, okay.
Propane.
It was very fun. side.
How did Andy do?
Oh, he didn't pitch very well.
No.
But he hit he was on fire. He batted 1,000 in three of the games.
Oh.
Six something and another eight.
His bat was
on fire.
That is phenomenal. Yeah. You saw the young guy.
I got to see him play, I think, two games, and he's such a little stud out there. It's really enjoyable watching him. What makes it enjoyable is his enthusiasm.
Well, that's a great athlete, though. I mean, passion.
But you can be a great athlete and not have a lot of passion, but he's got passion with his athletic ability.
We played
Luis Gonzalez's team.
He did.
On Friday, the second game, and we were behind 3-5 in the last inning with one out, and Andy was up to bat, bases were loaded, and he hit a double, and we won the game.
Oh, that is phenomenal.
So that was really exciting.
That is really exciting. And, you know, and I think, you know, and if you look at it from athletic point of view and you translate it to life and or business, mm-hmm. passion is really such an important aspect of whatever you do.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Do it with passion, right?
Well, that's the entrepreneurial spirit. And we've talked about that. It's not just about owning a business. It's about life.
Right. You know, and actually, that's the interesting thing about sports, too, is that more so than maybe other activities that you do, when you play a sport, it brings out what's really inside you. You know, so when you see a young kid, 14 or 15, out there playing baseball, football, basketball, whatever, and they're throwing temper tantrums and really angry, they're really angry inside of them. It just kind of comes out in the sport. So to me, the beauty of a sport is watching the person's true personality shine.
And the parents.
And the parents. Oh, absolutely,
oh,
yes.
There are some psycho parents.
Oh, yes, there are.
But it was fun, Dave. How was your in-between? How was your New Year's?
It was good. Fairly quiet, but had some last-minute tax planning because if you have a corporation, you got to sort of zero it out.
Zero out those profits?
Yeah. I mean, you don't...
legally, of course.
Yeah, of course, legally. But, I mean, that's important. So, you know, usually I'm not available until, 5, 6 on New Year's Eve. In the old days, I had this huge company, and we would look at that because they were cash basis, so we had this, give bonuses out. And I would often be up till 11:30 at night on New Year's Eve working.
Wow.
Wow, can you believe that?
The entrepreneurial spirit.
Yeah, that is, helping people, and that's important.
And Mr. Dean, what were you doing on New Year's Eve?
I was partying.
No way. Yeah? Where was that?
Went to Moon Valley Country Club, where I'm a member, and had a very nice New Year's Eve party. But they made a mistake. It was a bunch of old farts at the party.
No way.
And they served dinner too early. By 10 o'clock, people were leaving the club.
Really? By 10 o'clock?
By 10 o'clock, half our table was gone.
I
couldn't believe it. 11 o'clock, they were like,
that's
10 of us
because
left.
Half of Phoenix is still from back east, and they were thinking the ball had already dropped.
They showed the ball dropping at 10 o'clock.
Like,
everybody
okay,
left. Okay.
No way.
The
at
ball
10?
Dropped. Yeah.
How did they do that?
Well, they just, showed on a little TV thing.
Oh,
you know,
my
and then they
gosh.
Did the countdown. The ball dropped, and half the crowd left.
They had, before it dropped, they fell asleep,
and
maybe.
I was only on my first bottle of wine.
Shoot, we could have just celebrated in the morning because of Australia,
Exactly.
Yeah, that's
exactly, yeah.
Oh, man. So was that disappointing in a way?
A little bit. I think next year they need to serve dinner at 11.
Or have a, yeah, at 11. Yeah. When they served it, when? At 9?
7 o'clock.
Oh, 7?
Yeah, people are done eating by 8:30. It's like, oh, my God, I have to dance for 3.5 hours?
Didn't they have...
That wasn't Craig saying, don't
no.
I have to dance.
I love dancing.
He's the dancing king.
It didn't matter to me.
Wow, we're going to call you the king.
The king.
He would like that.
Yeah?
Yes. All hail the king.
Yeah, that's right. How do you bow down? I forgot.
I'll teach you.
Okay. Then you can knight us. Or what is that called?
Did you see who's getting knighted?
Austin.
No. Powers?
No.
No, Austin is going to be knighted.
Oh,
no,
yeah, I heard
that?
About
he
that. Austin
be...
of who's who?
Yes, Austin
yeah,
Feldman.
Yeah, when's he going to do
knighted
that?
Knighted by who?
By the Count, of course.
The Count of Monte Carlo.
Remember?
Yeah, I did hear about that.
Yes, he's going to be knighted.
But who else is going to get knighted?
Tell us.
Simon Cowell.
Who?
Oh.
Simon Cowell from American Idol is being knighted by the Queen.
I'm not watching American Idol anymore without Simon.
No?
No, it's not going to be the same. And actually, my sister sent me an email today showing how long Queen Elizabeth II has been around. Because we just saw the King's Speech with Colin Firth.
I heard that was a great movie.
It was one of the very best movies I have ever seen.
It got great reviews.
The lines are very long to get in.
Well, are not they? Only that. Well, I mean, I thought the lines in the movie. Yes, he had to memorize them.
Duh. Gee,
but he was a stutterer, and to get in character.
Wait, is that S-T-U-D-D-E-R, stutterer? Or stutter. Okay. Yeah.
This is a family show.
Well, anyway, his daughter was Elizabeth, who became the queen.
Oh.
And my sister sent me this thing showing all the pictures of her shaking hands with the presidents of the United States. She goes back, you know, to Clinton, to Bush, the other Bush, to Reagan, to Lyndon Johnson, to Carter, to JFK, to Eisenhower, and Truman.
That's pretty good you did that backwards.
Yeah.
I'm impressed.
Who was before Truman?
Who was before Truman?
Roosevelt.
Roosevelt.
Who was before him? Okay, that's enough of that. Anyway, so that was, I was thinking of seeing that movie. I didn't see it.
Wasn't it Harding before Roosevelt?
Oh, yeah, it was. Oh, yeah, Kurt says yes. How does he know?
Wow.
Wow, that is
school teacher.
Oh, very nice.
Oh, that's how.
Aren't you impressed that I know those things?
I was impressed that you could say it backwards.
Yes.
Yeah.
Instead, I went to see True Grit.
Yeah. And how did you like it?
Well, it had great reviews.
That's right. You said it was slow.
It was slow.
Yeah.
Mm. It was very slow. Great acting.
I went to see Gulliver's Travels.
How was that?
It was cute. It was.
Really? I like Jack Black.
Yeah, I like Jack Black. He was, you know, if without him, it was good. You know,
wow.
Andrew and I went to see it. So it was
just something
fun to do.
Well, I'm sure he liked it, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. He's 14. Gulliver's Travels? Yeah.
No?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, I love Jason Segel. Right? Jason Segel?
What? Who's Jason Segel?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, there we are. What were we doing?
Remember that time when we were in here laughing?
There we go.
Laughing hysterically?
Yeah. And we are listening. You are listening to Breakthrough Thinking.
We got off our script.
Yeah. This is Entrepreneurial Spirit starring Leanne Hull and Craig Dean. And we will be right back with a very special guest, Sue Ellen Allen. And we'll be right back.
Weidenauer, Heighton & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Weidenauer, Heighton & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today. 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. And this is the Entrepreneurial Spirit starring Leanne Hull and Craig Dean. I love how I say that. Starring Leanne Hull and Craig Dean.
I like that too.
Yeah, that is good.
Yeah.
It's got a ring to it.
Yeah.
A ring, yes. A very beautiful ring. And we have a very special guest in studio. I mean, you know, this is great because starting off the new year, first Monday, first show right with 2011, Craig, you have a great guest today. You want to introduce our mystery guest.
Our mystery guest is Sue Ellen Allen. This is my first time meeting her, but she knows my wife very well because Sue Ellen has been, how many years have you been a member of Toastmasters?
Well, except for my vacation. A long time. Cabot Roberts was still alive.
Oh, wow, is that right? Yeah.
That goes back.
Goes back a long time.
Yes.
I don't even know the date, but about 25 years.
Oh.
Because Ellen's been in, I think, 26 or 27,
yeah,
something
wow.
like that.
That's the Park Central Toastmasters.
It's
the
pretty
best
unique.
Toastmasters in the world.
You know, it blows me away because I went last week because my wife's mentee spoke. And, you know, you get up at 5:30 in the morning, which I'm fine with because I'm an early riser anyway. But you think, who can give a speech at 7 o'clock in the morning? You walk into the room, and there is such excitement.
The air is electric.
Three speeches given, and each one of the speeches brought tears to my eyes.
Yeah. I'm not a morning person. And at 5 o'clock every Tuesday, I think, oh, my gosh, why am I doing this? And then you get there and you think, I remember why I'm doing this. It's the most fabulous. You go out so energized for the day. I make my interns come at least twice. And I have ASU interns. And speaking is a... It's a tool for your life skills toolbox. You know, it's so important, public speaking. And they're all terrified, like most people.
Well, it gives you such confidence once you're able to do it.
Yeah. So I make them go twice. And then some of them have joined and actually gotten, it's life-changing.
One of my very, very best friends, I won't mention his name, but it's Greg Wynn.
Oh. And Greg, we love you.
Many years ago, he bought Mundus Travel. Mundus Travel used to be the big travel company in Phoenix, Arizona. And they were like 200 employees. So when he first bought the company, he and his partner, he had to get up and speak to the 200 employees. He had a panic attack and had to run off the stage.
Wow.
He said he never was so frightened in his life until he had to play against me in golf. But, you know, earlier we were talking about New Year's resolutions and how it gives you an opportunity to start afresh. And when you say you had a vacation, you probably had the most unique vacation anybody can have. You spent 7 years in prison.
Yes, I did.
And to call it a vacation is...
I usually don't call it a vacation. I go back to calling it a gift.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was a humiliating, horrible, very, very difficult gift. I would not recommend it. But if you take any journey, life is a journey, and any journey you take, difficult or easy, if you learn something from it, and if it gives you your passion... Wow, that's everything.
Well, I picked up your book a couple of days
ago,
and I've gotten halfway through it. And
what's the book called?
The Slumber Party from Hell.
That's a great title. I love that title.
You know, it was given to me by an inmate at Estrella Jail. I walked in July. It was 115 degrees outside, and the offices in the halls are very cold. But you can feel the heat as you walk down the hall to the dorm. And when they open the doors to the dorm, the heat just blows you away because the dorms aren't air conditioning. And they had, for 180 women, they had two fans because the swamp coolers were broken. So two fans, 180 women. And this young girl who looked to me about 16, who was very pregnant, came to me. The officer told her to take me, and she took me to my bed and made the bed for me the prison way. There's a way that you make it the prison way. If you don't tie your sheets, it crawls all over the place, and you just end up with a big wad of cloth. So she made it for me. She was 8 and a half months pregnant, and she looked about 14, 16, and she said, "Welcome to the slumber party from hell."
Oh,
wow.
And I knew that was the title of my book. I knew I would never forget that.
So what type of, you said the gift, of course, is passion, or, you know, learning or really understanding what your passion is, I guess what your gifts are. Why don't you take us through that, how you develop that and what that passion is?
You know, I found out how blessed I am to have an education. I sign off all my emails, education, not incarceration, is the cheapest form of crime prevention. And when I walked into prison, I realized that I was blessed. I had a college degree. Here's something that most people in Arizona don't know. In the late 90s, I can't tell you the exact date, but in the late 90s, our legislature realized that 50% of all inmates were going in without high school graduation. Most inmates drop out of school in the sixth or seventh grade, before eighth grade. And this is not just Arizona, this is nationwide. But there was a problem. So our legislature in the late 90s deemed that they would put in the budget money for inmates to go to school to pass eighth grade. So when you go to prison now, you don't want to go there, but if you go in the first couple of weeks, they test you like an Ames test on your grammar, your language skills, your reading skills, and your math skills. And if you score below eight, like if you score 6.5, that's sixth grade, fifth month, or 3.2, that's third grade, second month. If you score below eight, you must go to class. And the classes are every day, and you're not allowed to have a job until you score eight. Then when you score eight, they have a graduation ceremony. You get a certificate, and you get to go out and get a job. And the job is yard crew raking rocks for 10 cents an hour. And there really is a job to keep the rocks tidy. And then when you leave prison, you get a check for $50. They've taken 25% out of your salary for the time you're there until it reaches $50. So you get a $50 check and a certificate that says, I have an eighth grade education. What the heck is eight? You can't even say, do you want fries with that?
Yeah, how do they, I wonder how they came up with eighth grade.
Not GED, eight.
Huh.
I don't know, but that's a problem. I know you ran for office. I'm sorry you didn't win.
Me too.
But
me too.
That's, education is a problem. So if we have people who only have eighth grade education, and then they can't get a job when they get out, and their places that they can't live, and their licenses they can't get, and nobody wants them in the neighborhood, of course, so what do? They go back to the friendly neighborhood drug dealer, yeah. And because there's nothing they can do. It's another form of racial discrimination, mm-hmm. You know. Suddenly you're an ex-felon or an ex-offender, as they like to say now.
So Sue Ellen, you like to be called Sue or Sue Ellen?
Sue Ellen.
Sue Ellen?
Mm-hmm. I'm a Southern girl.
Where are you from?
Texas.
Texas,
mm-hmm.
Okay. Could you give us a little history leading up to going into prison? What was life like for you? What were the circumstances for you to go to prison? And so the people that are listening and even us can have an idea what your life has been.
Well, way, way back, I was a high school English teacher and always was a teacher, really. And then went into business. I got burned out on teaching and should have stayed in it, really. But got burned out, went into business, worked always in public relations and marketing because I'm 65 years old and not ashamed to say it. Sorry to say it, but anyway. But women could do three things. We could be secretaries, teachers, or nurses. And then I eventually ended up here in Arizona with Del Webb as vice president of marketing for their hotel division.
With and Ann Mariucci?
Well, I knew Ann.
Okay, uh-huh. Wow.
We were not in the same division. I was in the hotel division. And found out it was all casinos, and I hated casinos. Hmm. I really like people to win.
Yes.
And you can't win there. Anyway, ended up with my own business with my husband, a fashion jewelry business. We lost it in a hostile takeover, and then we were indicted on securities fraud charges. And that's a long, long story. This show's not long enough. But that's where we ended up. And it's decisions, choices and decisions you make that take you there. My book talks a little bit about it, but it was a gift. I was there when my young roommate died. Gina Panetta was a 25-year-old girl who died of leukemia when the prison wouldn't give her a blood test to find out why she was so sick. And her parents and I became good friends after that. When I got out of prison, we formed an organization called Gina's Team. And Gina stands for Getting Inmates' Needs Addressed. And we bring educational programs into the prisons. We started with Perryville. And thankfully, I know this is a God thing. Ever since I've gotten out of prison, I thought, well, I would have these conversations with God when I was in prison, usually with my finger in the air going, God, are you listening? This is going on, and it's not good. And if you want Gina's Team to happen when I get out. And I right away met Representative Ash, Cecil Ash, at an ASU function, and told him about Gina's Team, and told him I was getting ready to have a meeting with the director of prisons, which was another God thing. And he said, I'd like to go to that meeting. I said, okay. And he's now an advisor on our board.
And that's the music. But we will be right back with Sue Ellen Allen. I'm sitting on my seat to see what's going on. So are the listeners. And this is Entrepreneurial Spirit, and we'll be right back.
FamilyValuesRadio.net. 1010 KXXT.
Collison, Phoenix.
Hi, this is Steve Sanchez, and I'm excited about my new home right here at 1010 KXXT, Saturdays from 7 a.m. as we talk about finance, politics, and the culture. Caution, we don't sit around the campfire singing Kumbaya. So catch me every Saturday at 7 a.m. on AM 1010 KXXT.
Are you earning 8% on your money? Hi, I'm Dan Cochimilio. I can guarantee 8% annual growth for future income. That's right, 8% guaranteed annual growth for future income that you can never outlive. It's your money, money that God has put you in charge of managing. Are you a good steward of your money? How do you know if you are? Do you know if your money is 100% safe from market losses? Is your estate planning as good as it could be? Are you trusting the answers to money questions to a person who doesn't share a Christ-centered worldview? I believe there are people out there who don't care about you as much as they care about getting your money. I don't operate that way. I offer free consultation and will help you with estate planning and show you how to double or even triple your money for retirement. My purpose is to help you secure your money. It's that simple. So call me, Dan Cochimilio, at 623-825-3900. That number again is 623-825-3900. That's 623-825-3900.
The program Arizona Christians have been waiting for. You won't want to miss the Arizona Christian Chamber of Commerce, a weekly radio show about our Father's business, every Thursday at 3 p.m. And make sure you log on to the website, www.azccc.org. So tell your friends about the show and just how the Chamber can help them. The Arizona Christian Chamber of Commerce.
1010 KXXT.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Entrepreneurial Spirit, starring Leanne Hull and Craig Dean. And special in-studio guest, we have Sue Ellen Allen. And what was the name of that book again?
The Slumber Party from Hell.
Wow, that's quite a story. And you were talking before the break, giving us a little bit more insight. And why don't you continue?
Well, I met Representative Ash, and he said he'd like to go to the meeting with me to meet with Director Ryan. And it turned out, I didn't know this, but Representative Ash was at that time the vice chairman of the Judiciary Committee that oversees the prisons. I mean, how amazing is that? It was a complete God thing. And then I just kept meeting more people that directed me to more things. Diane, Gina's mother, and I went to that meeting. Representative Ash went with us. He now serves on our board of directors with the Representative Sinema, who's a Democrat. So we have a Democrat and a Republican serving together.
Wow, there's a novel idea. Mm-hmm. That's so important.
And you know what? They're opposites apart in so many issues, but on judicial criminal justice, they are together. And Representative Ash is now the chairman of a committee on sentencing reform, which is extremely important to Arizona. And so we've talked about that a lot. And anyway, that's how Gina's team got started. And we then heard from Director Ryan that our program had been approved, my pilot program had been approved. And then I called the prison and made an appointment to go back out and meet with the warden.
Was it the first time that you were back after you've been?
The first time. I'd been out about 6 months. And that was, I kept thinking, now why do I want to go back into the lion's den? And why do I want to jump into this deep into the pool?
Like?
And it was very interesting, starting with, what am I going to wear? Typical woman. It was a little nerve-wracking.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And they were very nice to me. And they've all been very nice to me. But I wonder what they're thinking a lot. I think, are they thinking, what is she really going to do? And is she really going to do this?
She gonna
and
follow
what does she want to do?
Follow through.
Yeah,
that's
follow through.
So important.
And they went with it. And the first, it took us a while to get everything approved. But the first speaker we brought out, we were approved first for guest speaker every month. The first one we brought out was Misty Hyman. Misty is an Olympic gold medalist that lives here in the Valley. She's won in 2000 for the 200-meter butterfly. And she is a beautiful young woman, both inside and out. And you should have her on the show sometime. She's fabulous. She's now on our board, too. She's now on our board. And Misty went out and blew them away with her speech about goal setting and how important it is. She lost her chance at the Olympics when she was 16 by 3/100ths of a second.
Wow.
And her decision then was, do I keep swimming or do I stop? And that's often a decision, isn't it? And Misty made the decision that was right for her, and she kept swimming. So she talked to the girls about that. And she was worried. She was scared. She said, what are they going to see in me? They're just going to think that I'm a rich girl from Scottsdale, you know? And she said, I'm not. But I said, no, Misty, they're going to love you. And they loved her.
You know, and it's interesting, too, because in sports as well as in business, there's a limited or there's a perceived limited time for young women to achieve. There, that ceiling is not there for the boys, for the men.
Not so much.
And definitely you've got to get it early. So I'm amazed that she went on.
She was 16. She'd been swimming for 10 years.
That's a real
years.
Turning point.
It's a huge turning point. Yeah. And she won. She's been out twice now to the prison. And they loved her so much, they said, okay, what's next? And next was Kyrsten Sinema. She was the first legislator to go out and speak to inmates, which was really amazing. And then Representative Ash said he would go, so they went out together. And then we've taken a play by Linda and John King called Fix the Hurt. Mm. Their daughter was murdered by her ex-husband. And they've done what I say in my book, turn your pain into power. And they now
turn
have
your
a crusade.
Scars into stars.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. They have a crusade to help victims of domestic violence. So it's gone from there. Then the warden called me and said, Sue Ellen, we have a tour every year from ASU, and that some of the students would like to come out and volunteer and help, but we can't deal with that. So maybe you could talk to them. So I talked to the professor, and we had lunch, and she said, you know, you could have interns. And I said, I could have interns? I said, first of all, I'm an ex-felon. Second of all, our little organization is this grassroots, tiny, little, fragile thing. And third, I'm old. She said, no, that's okay. We like all of that. And I said, okay. She said, tell me what you want, write a wish list, and email it to me, and I'll see what happens. I got 8 interns the first semester. And then this semester, I had 8 more interns who have helped us grow Gina's team. 2 of them go out and teach civics. I'm a huge believer in civics, because if you know how your system works and you feel like you have a voice in your system, you are less likely to want to commit a crime against your system. And so I want to teach civics. I now have kids that go out that teach creative writing. And so we're doing writing, we're doing civics. We've got volunteers from Park Central who are going out with the gavel clubs. One of the things I was blessed to be able to do out there while I was an inmate was start gavel clubs, which are a division of Toastmasters International for institutions, because I knew it wouldn't cost the Princeton anything, and it would teach confidence and that public speaking thing that I really believe in. But I'll tell you, here's a big wish list for me. Anybody here know Sandra Day O'Connor?
Well, actually.
Well,
Leanne went to school with her.
Okay.
No.
Here's my wish. I put it out everywhere because I know it's going to happen. I was sitting on my bunk at Perryville in 2009, and Sandra Day O'Connor was on all the talk shows. She, too, believes in civics and the power of civics, and she has started a foundation. Anyway, she got behind a website. The organization created a website to teach civics to young people. It's an interactive website because we're not teaching it in our schools. And actually, the way I met Representative Ash was at this forum that ASU was having about how to teach more civics in the schools. And so when I got out, I thought, wow, we need that in the prisons, but I'm an inmate and, you know, I can't just write to her. Anyway, I got out and I went online and saw that part of the website had been created at ASU, part at George Washington University. So I called somebody at ASU, and they said, well, we're having this forum. Would you like to come? And I said, well, I'm an ex-felon. And they said, well, that's okay. You can come. And that's how I met Representative Ash. We're standing having breakfast, and we're balancing our little plates. And I said, hi, I'm Sue Ellen Allen. I just got out of prison. He said, well, hi, you sure don't hear that much.
That's an icebreaker.
Like saying you took a last.
Yeah. Wow. And so anyway, I told him about this. I think that we need this program that Justice O'Connor has created, we need it in the prisons, but inmates don't have access to computers. So it needs to be like a comic book or something. And I don't know Justice O'Connor, but I keep putting it out there. I keep asking everybody.
Okay, but it's going to happen.
It's going to happen. Yeah. When the time is right, it's going to happen.
My question, after reading the book, and, you know, I get it when you do something really terrible in society that sometimes you have to be put in prison. But the inhumane treatment that takes place, I mean, it was kind of like, I remember when I went in the Army basic training, and they treat you like the lowest life. It's like they try to break you down and become.
What's that about?
Yeah, what exactly? What's that about? I think maybe, especially during the Vietnam War, it's almost like you don't value your own life anymore. So if you go to Vietnam and get killed, you don't care. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But after reading those beginning chapters and the way people are treated, how can we as a society expect anybody not only to come out of prison and to do something creative and good for society, but how did you come out of this system alive?
Well, she went in educated, which was at least that she started that way. But
yeah, but alive is the key word there, because I was diagnosed with stage 3B breast cancer before I went in. And that's the reason I'm sitting here, because it was before I went in. If I had waited, they would have never found that lump, and I wouldn't be here. I know several women who found the lumps too late, and they died. And Gina died. And when Gina went into the hospital finally, after 2 months of sheer real agony, the doctor said her white blood count was 300,000 and her red blood count was zero.
Oh.
That her body was shutting down.
Yes.
And I kept asking Diane, her mother, are you sure that's what the doctor said? Are you sure? Yes. And that was part of their lawsuit, you know. But, yeah, I would not be alive. You know, I don't know why they think that, but I actually talked to the associate director one day about it, and I said, you know, I think that prison, and it's in my book, too, I think prison is like the bell curve. 20% are there because they want to help people and change lives. 20% are there because they want to make your life as miserable as possible. And the rest of it is just like, don't do anything on my watch.
Right,
it's a job.
Yeah.
But the problem is, and this is something that's really interesting for discussion, is the 20% that wants to make your life miserable seems to have the most power over all the others.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're nice,
absolutely,
you're nice to somebody, those officers are reporting you, are giving you trouble, are saying you're a wimp or a wuss or, you know, what's... And if you've read The Lucifer Effect by Philip Zimbardo, it's about the Stanford Prison Project. That went on back in I think it was the 70s or 80s. And he created in Stanford for 2 weeks a prison.
That's what project. I was just talking to you about. That he was on the Dr. Phil show. And how did
was
our.
He?
Yes.
I missed that.
Oh. And how did our soldiers right. over.
Yes, he's
how
an expert
did they
witness
do that?
Yes. How could they do something so inhumane?
When they had never done anything
yes.
bad in
yeah.
their life,
yeah.
and you put people in the right circumstances or the wrong circumstances, anybody can do
anybody.
That.
Well,
yep.
that
anybody.
That project was a 2 week project, and they had to stop it at the end of 1 week because they divided the group evenly amongst, and I think they pulled straws to see who were going to be the guards and who were going to be the inmates.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that were going to be the inmates were having nervous breakdowns.
Yeah.
They could not take it. It's very difficult.
Yeah.
Prison is easy in some ways and difficult in others. I mean, now that I'm out, I know all the rules. I know about insurance, and I know about jobs, and I know about showing up. And, you know, Woody Allen is not my favorite director, but he said 80% of success is showing up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's really the truth. I know about that. But if you're a drug dealer or you're a drug addict, you don't know about those things.
No.
And having insurance is expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And having to show up is expensive and time-consuming and demanding. And if you don't know how to do that, you don't have a pattern of behavior. You don't have a role model. And I learned a big thing when I was in Estrella. This girl was telling me about, she'd had three children, and she was telling about how her dad's a major in the Army, and he and her parents are raising the children, the grandparents. And I said, well, Kat, why didn't you take a birth control pill? Or, you know, what? She looked at me like I had three heads. And she said, Sue Ellen, when you're on drugs, the last thing you're thinking about is taking
control.
A pill
right,
or birth control.
Yeah.
You're just, you don't care. Mm-hmm. And then I realized, wow, people that are responsible take a pill mm-hmm. for your disease or whatever it is that you want. If you're on drugs, you're not thinking about anything to be responsible. And then I thought about our legislature who make the laws and how they're making laws for a group of society that they can't begin to understand because they haven't been there.
No, no.
The first girl I met who was 23 years old and told me she had been raped continuously by the boys in her family and by her father, and at 13 had given birth to her father's child. I couldn't wrap my mind around it.
It's too hard to fathom.
She was the first yeah. of many. 85% of the women out there have been raped.
Well, I remember watching or reading about a prison. It's like 80 or 85% of women in prison have been raped.
Yes, yes.
They're very, very hurt and angry. You know, and you know what happens to human beings when we get hurt? We get angry.
Yes.
You know, it's easier to be angry than it is to be hurt because mm-hmm. the anger feeds you at least, and hurt just brings you down. Yeah. But, you know, the interesting thing that I wanted to talk to you about, and I think we're going to have a break coming up, is recently President Obama called the owner of the Philadelphia Eagles
yes.
and thanked him for giving Michael Vick a second chance. Mm. Now, Michael Vick did something terribly wrong, mm-hmm. but he also went to prison and served his time. And the outcry that has gone against the president for thanking a human being for giving someone another chance.
It's stunning, isn't it?
It's stunning. So I wanted to talk to you what it's like to leave prison as a felon. And
good. I'd love to.
And when we come back, we will continue our discussion and with Sue Ellen Allen, author of Slumber Party from Hell. Where can they get that book, by the way?
At Barnes & Noble and from my publisher, inkwellproductions.com.
Oh, yeah, I picked it up at Barnes & Noble.
Did you?
At Arrowhead.
Excellent. And we'll be right back.
Weidenauer, Hynten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Weidenauer, Hynten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. Welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac, and this is Entrepreneurial Spirit, starring Leanne Hull and Craig Dean with special in-studio guests. We have Sue Ellen Allen, author of Slumber Party from Hell. That'd probably be a good title for a movie, too.
I think so.
Wow, that would be scary. Anyway,
from your mouth to God's ears.
Yeah. You know, there's something on your website, or Gina's team, that website, that really stayed with me. It says, as team members, we have learned that prison is the gift that keeps on giving. Mm. Why don't you explain what that means, how you came up with that?
Well, when I got out, I have wonderful credit score. I'm a college-educated woman. I always had a business. I went to prison at 57, so it wasn't like I had a criminal history. And yet I cannot live in any apartment that is run by a corporation. They just will not take an ex-felon. And I don't care if it's just a DUI. They will not take anybody with a felony. And it doesn't matter what your felony is. So there are many, many places I can't live. There are many, many jobs I cannot have. There are over 100 licenses in the state of Arizona that I could not get. I could never be a teacher again, even though my crime was not related to children. And so if there are jobs you can't have and there are places you can't live, what are you going to do? Where are you going to go? I was lucky. I was blessed. I had a wonderful community support. I had friends that gave me a wonderful place to live in their home until I could get on my feet. And I live in a condominium that was rented to me by a woman who owned it. I can, you know, rent from someplace privately. My husband and I do. But there's lots of things you cannot do. You are not allowed to do. I can't vote. And that just really annoys me. Once I'm off probation, I could vote if I didn't have restitution. But anybody that has restitution cannot vote. And you know what makes me mad about that? People that walk away from their homes because the homes are underwater, I understand that. People that declare bankruptcy, I understand that. But they can vote. Even though they owe money, they have a debt to society or to the bank or something. But anybody with restitution can't vote. I don't think that's right.
Wow. You know, what also was really apparently seemed to be there's something going on with especially here in, I think, in America with the prison system. It says on your website 2.3 million people in prison, and 30 years ago there were only about 500,000.
Well, there are, let's look at this statistic from 1980 to 2008. The general population increased 34% and the prison population increased 375%.
Wow.
We incarcerate more people per capita than Russia and China. The United States of America does that. And here's the thing. You talked about Michael Vick. Before I went to prison, I had 3 dogs and 4 cats, so I'm an animal lover. I really love animals, and I understand what he did. But to put this man who has so much money in prison for, I think, 3 years is what he served, isn't
close,
it?
Close. I think it was 26 months or 28.
Okay,
like
let's just say, that's 2 years. Yeah, okay, let's say 2 years. The average cost, he was in federal prison, wasn't he? Okay, so federal prison, that's about $45,000 a year. So that is $90,000 of taxpayer money to incarcerate him, where he could have maybe spent that 2 years as a volunteer working at an animal shelter and learned a lot more. Gina was in prison for a $3,000 crime. She got 3.5 years. And at $20,000, they say the director Ryan says it's $20,000 a year to incarcerate in Arizona. At $20,000 a year, that's $90,000 to incarcerate somebody for a $3,000 crime. Another one of my roommates, Melissa, first offense too. Melissa was incarcerated for a $7,000 crime, first offense, for 7 years. That's $140,000 taxpayer money, uses your money at work, for a $7,000 crime. Now, I'm going to jump over to California to a man named Gregory Taylor, who was released from prison this summer. You can check him out on the internet. Gregory Taylor was incarcerated for, he broke into a church kitchen because he was hungry, and he got 25 to life because it was his third strike. His first two strikes were thefts of under $10 without a weapon. And his third was breaking into a church kitchen because he was hungry. Well, the Stand for Justice Project looks at some of these cases of these three-strike things when they're excessive. And they took his case to the appellate court in California. And the judges on the appellate court did rule that it was indeed excessive. And so after 13 years, they let him out. Now, 13 years, and if you go to the California website, it costs $47,000 to incarcerate. That's $611,000 for 13 years. If they had kept him for 25 years, it would have been $1,175,000 for breaking into a church kitchen. Now, on whose budget balance sheet does that make sense? I don't know, but that's your tax dollar at work.
But it's not just the finances here we're talking about, and especially in this guy's case, from California. I mean, Does it really fit the crime? I mean,
no. what did he learn from that?
Nothing.
And kind of the underlying issue here too is people with money would never end up in prison for those things.
The same, and they statistically they say that white and black males do about the same amount of drugs, but a black male has 5 times more likely to go to prison. Yeah, than a white male.
That is astonishing, mm-hmm. and also something else on the website. It says it's really about big business. Do you feel that? Part of keeping this whole environment, the whole pattern of prisons today, is because of big business?
Well, in Arizona, it's certainly big business. And if you talk to, oh my gosh, I can't remember her name, but American Friends Association is headquartered in Tucson. And they are now studying Corrections Corporation of America. They're watching them because they are going, their representatives are going to all the small communities in Arizona to talk to the legislators, the state, the city council, and because they want to put more private prisons in Arizona. Hmm. And American Friends in, I can send you that website.
Isn't the one up in Kingman a private one where they had the breakout recently?
Mm-hmm. It is, mm-hmm. It is. And if the Auditor General just did a report, it's like 67 pages, but I brought you a copy of the, about this, because it says that,
I'll share it with Dave.
It says that actually private prisons cost more money. The Auditor General said that state paid private prisons $58.89 a day for each minimum custody inmate, compared to $48.13 a day that the state costs the state and state facilities. So that is a pretty important thing. They're saying, oh, private prisons are cheaper, but... And if you make money, the whole idea with private prisons is to make money off the incarceration of a human being. And, you know, we fought a civil war to not have people enslaved, and now we're making money off the incarceration of human beings.
And the other problem is, according to the website, your website, 93% of these inmates will be released back in community. So if you think about it, what are they learning in prison? And if they're not being educated, where do they have to go? You said it earlier that they can't get housing often, they can't get jobs. So where else is there to go? It's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy teaching you the what?
You're punished for life for one mistake that you made.
You are.
And generally it's when you're pretty young, too, that you make these mistakes.
Representative Ash is really campaigning hard for resentencing laws because he's looking at alternatives to incarceration. With the budget and our problems in our state, we simply cannot afford an almost $1 billion budget. The budget for prison here is $949 million.
Wow.
And, it's just slightly under K-2 in the universities. And that's a lot of money. We could look at alternatives to incarceration. But back in the 80s, we passed a law for truth in sentencing so that now inmates must serve 85% of their time. Most states, are at 50 to 65%. We serve 85%. It's a lot of time. And I met girls in prison, young girls, that were there for forging prescriptions for prescription drugs, you know. And Rush Limbaugh went to rehab. Mm-hmm. But these gals went to prison for 3.5 years at $90,000 each. That's your taxpayer money at work. We're not talking about the violent criminals, Dave. We're not talking about the ones that are there for murder and really serious crimes. We're talking about the nonviolent drug-related crimes that really would cost the taxpayer so much less money to treat another way. And would give them hope, wouldn't give them a stigma, and end up saving the community, families, and the taxpayer.
You know, and really the word is education.
It is.
I mean, when you take a look at Arizona, I think the last statistic was like 42 or 43% of our population has less than a high school degree in Arizona.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not a highly educated
state. And when we talk about wanting to bring big businesses to Arizona to hire people. We don't have the people for them to hire.
No.
They need educated people.
We were an agricultural community. Mm-hmm. We really were, and to a certain extent, we still are.
But it's so amazing because when I look back as a small kid, you dared not skip school because there were truancy officers out they would grab you by the collar and take you right back to school? No.
No fear for the kids now.
No,
nothing,
they're not afraid.
Nothing whatsoever.
It's because you're not allowed to punish at school. We're not allowed to discipline. Even as parents. Mm.
Gina's story.
Gee, you shouldn't. Don't spank your kid or you're liable to get in trouble by someone watching you.
When you read the letter that
I got spanked. Is that why I went to prison? Oh, I don't think so.
I got spanked plenty of times.
Yeah, but I don't think that
wasn't. I think those were on dates. So. But anyway, am I allowed to say that? Okay, no. I don't know.
Bleep, bleep,
I have film.
Bleep 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 bleep.
And when we come
back, see the late show at 10.
That's right. When we return, we will continue our discussion with Sue Ellen Allen. And I have a question that you can start thinking about. You have a tradition every New Year's Eve that I'd like you to describe, and we'll be right back.
Are you able to ensure the safe driving and productivity of your employees? I'm Kara Lee with GPS Heroes, and with our plug-and-play GPS device, you can set geofences, get speeding alerts, and a full report card each week with driver reports and mileage, all to your computer or handheld device. It's easy to get and easy to use, in real time, with no service contracts. Just go to gpsheroes.org/21 and order yours today. That's gpsheroes.org/21.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Entrepreneurial Spirit, starring Leanne Hull and Craig Dean, and special in-studio guest Sue Ellen Allen, author of Slumber Party from Hell. And before we get into your New Year's Eve tradition, why don't you go over that statistic you were telling us about?
Thanks. Massachusetts, Washington, and Arizona all have about 6.5 million people. I think the census brought us in at 6.4 million, something like that. Massachusetts has an inmate population of 11,000. Washington has an inmate population of 16,000. And we, Arizona, has an inmate population of 40,000. And the quickest response to that is, oh, but most of those are illegals. Criminal aliens are 6,000. Mm. So it still leaves us with 34,000 inmates compared to other states.
You know, I was thinking, well, it's because Washington and Massachusetts are liberal states. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you think of Arizona, we're such a – we have so many people that come to this state running away from their problems, hoping to find kind of nirvana. And when they get here, you know, you can never run away from your problems.
I thought they were running away from their asthma.
those problems –
And the olive trees.
Yeah.
Those problems will follow you.
Yeah.
And those other states, there's – you know
– Do you have a theory as to why our prison population is so large?
That's a really good question, Leanne. I think that Arizona tends to be a very punitive state. We really do like to be tough on crime here. And I suggest that instead of being tough on crime, we need to be smart on crime. Because we're just, there are several legislators now that are saying we need to quit locking people up because we're mad at them. We need to lock them up because of the crime they have committed. But often we're locking them up because we're mad at them. There's a very interesting, this used to be just a liberal a issue, an attack, but just recently, Newt Gingrich and a whole lot of that right side, the conservative side, so we've got the liberals and the conservatives, they've launched a website called rightoncrime.com. And it is all about the subject and how we cannot afford to continue with the level of incarceration and the cost. We have got to look at it a different way. So now it's becoming a bipartisan issue for the first time. And that's what we're about, making it bipartisan, to be smart on crime.
Which makes total sense. And it's sort of funny how big business with money and greed and all that has kept that this type of environment going. Yeah. But it's going to be money that's going to pare it back, too.
Yes, it is.
Because it's just unaffordable. And it's not. It doesn't sound like it's right for many of the crimes to
and
have people.
You know, your question earlier, Craig, about why treat people so meanly. I was astonished at the mean-spiritedness. Mm-hmm. There are some that are nice, but the mean-spiritedness really did astonish me. If you had told me what was happening in our prisons, I wouldn't have believed it. But I saw it.
Do you think when Martha Stewart went, wherever she went, that it was the same for her?
Yes, I think it probably was. I think so.
It's too bad that she didn't talk more about that experience and use it to, instead of just covering it up, which I think it's just been covered over. And
she could have
been a voice.
She could have been a voice, and I too was disappointed in that because I watched her first show from prison and thought, oh, she's going to say something. And she did say a little bit the first couple of shows, but then after that it was like it never happened.
Yeah. I think she was protecting her show.
She was protecting her empire.
Yeah,
and
her
I understand that.
Yeah.
You know,
yep,
I understand.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Her, she has stockholders. Sure, very few people that get out want to talk about it. And this is something I just realized. You know, when you come back from Vietnam or you come back from Iraq or Iran or Afghanistan and you have PTSD, and you don't talk about it. There are soldiers, World War II, they didn't talk about it because it's painful. Mm-hmm. And if you are around a large group of ex-felons, they will not talk about it.
No, we only want to see their medals. We want to see we want to hear their stories of success and achievement. And we don't want to hear their challenges.
I told my husband is a vet, and he goes to the VA for treatment. And I said, you know, I think there's a social thing going on there at the VA. All you guys like to get together. And he said, well, we know where we've been. And the same thing happens with ex-prisoners. We know where we've been and what we've been through. And there is that feeling, I don't have to explain it to you. Because that mean-spiritedness is something very hard to explain and define. And you think, why are you being that way? What? But it's very scary. It's very terrifying. And
because you have no power against it. You've lost all your power.
Completely powerless. You better keep your mouth shut or something bad will happen to you, and there will be repercussions.
Did you get depressed in prison?
Yeah. Yes. I cried enough to float the place away. I don't know why it's still there.
Were you married before you went into prison?
No, David and I have been married for 21 years. And we were co-defendants together. But we were married, so they let us write to each other. And that's a big thing, because when you're married, you have to prove you're married, or you have to prove it's your son or daughter, or you're not allowed to write to another inmate. So we were allowed to write to each other. And
But took some time. You had to find your marriage certificate.
Yes, you have to get all of that together, and that's a challenge. You have to have somebody find it for you.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that was hard. And then when we got out, the probation and parole is historical that they will not let co-defendants live together. So there was a question about whether we would be allowed to live together despite the fact that we'd been married for 20 years. And fortunately, the parole board said, yes, they can be allowed to live together because I don't want them sneaking around like 17-year-olds. I mean, my husband's 76 years old, you know. But they can prevent you. If you're a mom and you want to move into your mother and father's house, and that's where your children are living, but your brother is an ex-felon and he's living there, the parole and probation office can say, no, you can't live there. with your mother and father and your children because your brother is there and send you somewhere else.
You know, I was struck by your creativity when you were in prison, your bingo games, the parties you would throw, the way that you were able, your roommate was scared to death of spiders and what you had to do to seal the windows. I mean, it really teaches you, it's instinct survival.
Well, the spider thing is a real problem. There are black widows and brown recluses out there, and nothing is there's no air conditioning. So you have the windows are frozen. They're 30 years old, so they're frozen about an inch and a half wide, and the spiders just waltz right through, you know. But if you they sell you paste at the store, like paste to do collages and things, and so it's Elmer's glue is what it is. If you put the paste in a little bowl of water with your Kotex, they give you 15 Kotexes a month or 11 Kotexes. I don't know what it is, but like 11 or some Kotex a month. And you put the Kotex in the little bowl of paste and water. And then you seal, you stuff the window all the way up around it. And then it hardens and it's like cement. And that seals your window so that the spiders don't come in. But it's absolutely illegal. It is completely against the rules. And if an officer finds it, you get a ticket. You can all kinds of bad things can happen to you, disciplinary things. But everybody does it because you don't want the spiders and the dust storms. There's lots of dust storms out there. The prison used to be surrounded with fields where they grew vegetables. But they stopped that, I don't know how many years ago they stopped it. And some of the old numbers can tell you, oh, yeah, we used to have really good food. But I would have died for a tomato. Every 6 weeks you get one very thin sliced tomato. And for it's like you can transparent, and I missed vegetables and fruit so much. But anyway, yeah, you get really creative with what you have to do. I'll tell you another great story about Kotex in the prisons. When I was in the jail, you're not allowed to have. I know. Do you mind? Is that is that okay?
Dave's a little embarrassed.
Kurt, can we talk about this?
Can you talk about this?
We get the thumbs up from our producer.
Sanitary napkins. AKA Kotex.
Well. When I came back,
it sort of depends.
Oh,
I have got a guy for you, the punster of the world. When I got back from the hospital, the surgeons had said when I had my mastectomy, and I was in Estrella Jail, they said I was the first woman to ever have a mastectomy while I was there, and it was very, very tough. And when I got, the surgeon said you need a pillow to cushion your arm. You've lost 28 lymph nodes. You need to protect it, and you need to, for comfort and protection, no pillows at the jail. And the medical department, no pillows, no. And the girls that were my friends in low places, my they looked really sad, but they went away, and they came back about 3 hours later, and they said, close your eyes, Sue Ellen, and hold out your hand. And I felt the softest thing in my hands, and I opened my eyes, and there was the most incredible blue pillow. How in the world? And I looked closer at it, and I realized that they had taken their state-issue Kotex that the state gives you, this blue, and it was the old-fashioned kind, that not the wings kind, and they had woven it together.
I understand.
Okay. Most of the people listening to you, they had woven it together in kind of this tufted pillow, and then they had shredded one, and they'd taken the little golf pencil, and they'd poked holes all the way around it, and they had sewed with the golf pencil these shredded pieces of fabric.
Wow, how creative.
And then they tied the ends, and they'd fringed it, and I had this. It was like a designer pillow. It was the most beautiful pillow I'd ever seen.
Do you still have it?
Oh, no. I had to leave it behind. I was going to prison. But the thing about it was...
She sold it for her.
I don't know what happened to that pillow, but the prostitutes, the drug addicts, and the thieves were the ones who comforted me with that pillow.
Oh, really?
Wow.
They were the ones that made that pillow for me. It was absolutely illegal. Completely against the rules, and if they had found it on me or they'd found any of who did it, we would all been in huge trouble. I hid it very carefully every day.
Why is that illegal, things like that?
Because it's contraband. If you're not using it for this thing that it's supposed to be used for example, in a peanut butter jar. In the prison, you got all these spiders and bugs and things, so you want to be tidy and neat, and you don't want them in your room. So if you've bought some peanut butter from the store and the jar is empty and you wash it out, you could put your candy in that or you could put your coffee in that because they don't sell you resealable things from the store. So that would keep it neat and tidy. Mm-hmm. But the peanut butter jar is not being used for what it's meant to be used for, which is containing peanut butter.
Oh.
So it's contraband.
Wow.
Wow.
Who thinks these things?
Do you still have contact with the people that you're in prison with?
you know, when you're on paper, you're not allowed to have contact because you might want to commit a crime together. So any ex-felons are not really allowed
to
get
together. So
you
can't be a part of your pencil pal?
You know, what's funny about it is all of these women who are addicts get out, and men, and they're not allowed to be in touch with each other, but they're assigned to classes. You have to go to AA programs, and they're all in the same class together. So I know a girl who was actually, her probation was revoked because she met a guy in one of their classes, and she had a date. And they sent her back to prison to finish up her sentence because she had a date, and that was against the rules. So it cost the taxpayer more money. She hadn't broken a law. It's what they call a technical violation. But a technical violation can be being late for a meeting, being late for, having a drink. It's all technical violations. It's not breaking a new law. They can send you back.
Wow. And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with Sue Ellen Allen, author of Slumber Party from Hell, and we'll be right back.
Weidenauer, Hynten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Weidenauer, Hynten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Entrepreneurial Spirit, starring Leanne Hull and Craig Dean, and special in-studio guest Sue Ellen Allen. Does anyone ever get tongue-tied with that? Sue Ellen Allen.
Me.
Oh, me too. And author of Slumber Party from Hell. Now, I was reading a real sweet story about your tradition in New Year's Eve.
Yes.
And why don't you describe that?
Well, in Brazil, I used to work for a company that sent me down to Brazil a lot for business. And in Brazil on New Year's, everyone goes to the beach in Ipanema and Copacabana and Rio, dressed in white on New Year's Eve. And they make boats, and some of them are tiny little boats, like a boat for Barbie, and some of them are pretty lavish. But you write down all the bad things that happened to you the year before and all the good things you want for the next year. And you put little offerings to the goddess of the sea, like perfume or flowers or candy or, I don't know, money probably works. But they launch their boats into the ocean. And if the ocean takes your boat out, well, then it looks pretty good for the new year. But if the boat comes crashing back to the shore, you're out of luck. Not going to be really good. And David and I decided we wanted to do that. We thought that was a really good idea. We lived in Phoenix over on Maryland at 19th Street right by the canal. And so we decided we would make little boats, and we made them out of milk cartons. And we put little votive candles in, and we did all the stuff. And because we don't like to go out New Year's Eve, you know. I don't like to kiss a lot of strange men that I don't know. And get in the traffic.
Neither
and,
do I.
Yeah, oh, I hate that. I can imagine. So we took the little boat. I said, you know, the canal looks pretty good. That's this ocean. I mean, it's going to go to the ocean eventually. And we walk out, and we launched it into the canal, and we watched it bob down the canal. I said, I just know it's going to the ocean. So we went to Perryville, and I told the girls about it. And we decided that we would do that there at the prison. So very cold night, and we were out freezing. And we wrote our bad things for the last year. Mostly everybody, you know, prison is the bad thing. And everybody wants their family for the new year and the good things. And they said, well, Sue Ellen, it's going to be locked down soon. What do we do with these? And I said, well, I think we're going to have to flush them down the toilet. Because that's the
that
closest,
way they
that's
won't
water.
Come back.
Yeah, it won't come back.
You know, it's a very interesting tradition because in the Jewish faith, it's the same thing. Rosh Hashanah, you would, and in fact, in Israel, the Jews go to the sea. You throw your sins out into the sea, and they're swept away, never to come back again. In fact, if you drive around Phoenix on Rosh Hashanah, you see a lot of Orthodox Jews in front of the canal. Those things that, you know, that move the canal water along. That they're there praying and throwing their
sins.
So
I wasn't so far off.
No, it's
now I have a question for you. How come you can say the Jews and I can't say the Jews? Because whenever I said the Jews, you could correct me, and so I had to resort to saying ish.
No, it's how you use it.
I see.
If you say he's a Jew, that to
it's
me is
different than the Jews.
The Jews.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay. Well, I just had that quick little question. Sorry.
I'm glad that came up in the radio show.
Leave me
anything
out of
else? Yeah. We'll leave for a few minutes. And,
I'm politically incorrect enough as it is.
Well, we have maybe 8 minutes or so left in the segment.
Thank God.
Time is
flown.
Oh, you're
so ish.
But let me ask you a question. Going forward, what's some of your hopes, your dreams? What do you want to accomplish? Taking all these great lessons and learnings, it seems like you're all about hope and inspiration, motivation. So what's going to be?
Yes,
looking forward.
I really want to have this conversation more with I want everyone in the world to have this conversation about how and who we incarcerate, and have people think about it, because Americans are kind people. You know, we're good, nice people, and I don't think we realize what we're doing unless you go there. If once you have a relative in prison, you go, oh my gosh, I didn't know that. So I want this conversation. I want to bring more educational programs into the prisons. And we're just now at Perryville and at Mingus Mountain Academy in Prescott. We want to expand. And so that we're looking forward to that. And I'll tell you a really quick story about Mingus because I think it's so important. At Christmas this year, the Panettas, Gina's parents, decided they wanted to do something for the girls there. And the girls, it's a level one juvenile facility, and the girls are 12 to 18. Mm. And so I donated one of my books to their library, and they said, we don't have a library. And I went, oh, my gosh, you don't have a library? I'm an English teacher, you know? So I gave that task to the interns to start a library, and we've collected now, I think we have close to 3,000 books, but the first run for Christmas was about 800 books that we took up. And then the Raven Cafe in Prescott got involved and let us be a drop-off point for books. And then they got Grandma's Bakery involved, and she donated cookies to take up to the girls at Prescott. And then Gina's aunt sent an email out to everybody that she works with at State Farm and said, we want to give every one of these girls a stuffed animal for Christmas. And she got over 150 stuffed animals from all her workers at State Farm. And we took them up there, and we gave them the books, and we gave them the cookies, and we gave them the stuffed animals. And afterwards, the girls came up to us, big, little, every size and color, and said, never in my life have I had my very own stuffed animal. Wow. The implications of that are stunning to me. The social, cultural, racial, economic issues of that are stunning to me.
It begins at an early age. Ellen, you know, has book pals.
Yes.
And she goes to the underprivileged distressed school districts, and at Christmas time they give out books to the kids, and I've seen it on video. The kids, this is the first book I've ever had. There's not one book in the house. It's the first book they will ever have that they can take home.
And there's a big debate right now that I saw a little bit of on television about the parents should be the ones giving the children information on sex education and doing all these things at home. It shouldn't be the schools. But people that are Sarah Palin said, the parents need to be doing this. Sarah Palin is a good parent. But what about all of these other parents who are on drugs themselves and they cannot parent? And we're legislating for them? That's insane. The parents should be the one making these decisions, but the parents are on drugs. So, yes, no books, no stuffed animals. That's stunning. We want to do more with the juvenile facilities to stop them from taking the next step. And I speak a lot. I go around speaking. I hope more people read my book because it is all the proceeds go to restitution, so that's a good thing. And there's a little message at the end of each chapter that no matter how bad things are, you can turn your pain into power and you can make a difference. And that's what it's about, making a difference. Your life will change completely and have real, true meaning, which I think is what we're all supposed to have, if you're making a difference. And I coined a motto while I was in prison. It's been there, done that, now how can I help? Because if you've been there and you've done it and you've been through it, you're the perfect person to help the next one coming along.
Because you have credibility.
Yeah.
And at the end of each chapter, three little words, inside or out.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't matter where you are. It does not matter. I'll tell you a really good thing is the prison didn't ban my book. I thought they might ban it, but they said, no, we're not going to ban it. It doesn't have any security issues like how to build a bomb or something. I don't know how to do that. But it's there's a little positive message for everybody about no matter where you are, inside or out, you can make a difference. You have a voice.
How's your relationship changed when you were in prison now that you're out and you're maybe dealing with some of the personnel in, that worked in prison?
Well, they're being very nice to me, and I'm very grateful. You know, they're being very accepting of Gina's team. They're very excited about it. They are very supportive of our volunteers who go out. And, you know, I'm very grateful. I didn't know how they would be.
You know, frankly, if it makes their job easier, and if you're having a positive impact, you would think that they would be.
You would, but it's not always like that. And every prison is different. Every warden is different. Every deputy warden is different. And every prison in Arizona and all over the country.
And you're fighting that 20%.
Yes.
There is that 20% that want life to be as bad for everybody else as it is for them. And a lot of those people get in positions of power.
But go back to second chances. Mm-hmm. I saw an article, and somebody sent me an article about Michael Vick and how second chance, this thing about the Eagles.
Right.
I was stunned to see that there were 9,000 comments. 9,000
yes.
comments.
Oh, yeah. And that was just the beginning.
9,000. I read the first 25,
yeah.
and I was stunned at how vitriolic they were against
yes.
Bush, against Obama, against Bush for starting the Second Chance Act, Obama yeah. for calling the Philadelphia Eagles a Vic because
yeah.
he didn't deserve a second chance.
And Sue Ellen.
Sue Ellen.
When I announced my run for mayor, it just initially, the very first announcement, there were so many negative comments.
Oh.
About that. And these were people from my own party. I thought, oh my gosh, what's it going to be like when the other side, and this was a nonpartisan position. I thought, these are mean-spirited people. Why? Why do we not encourage people? Why not support them? Why do we want to kill our own?
I don't know, but we do.
And why do we let it happen? Why?
Oh my gosh,
why do those pages go on and on? It just feeds into
everybody's. And it's only the negative people that
yeah.
have something to say. Where are all the positive people
exactly.
saying and doing something positive?
You'll probably get some letters about my being on here, giving me a second chance to talk.
Well, I think it's
just
an inspiration.
Just let them try.
See,
just
I mean,
let them.
Look, we just went through the holiday season. Isn't that part of the holiday season is forgiveness?
Forgiveness.
Yeah.
Isn't that one of the most powerful things in the world and in the universe? Forgiveness?
We talk about it a lot in this country, but we don't practice it
we
as
hold
much.
On
we're
to
much
no,
more
we
Old
don't.
Testament than New Testament.
I held on. It took me 56 years to start forgiving my father.
Wow.
And I'm not done yet.
Wow.
Yeah. 56 years it took me.
And you just had your first book read to you recently, too.
Yes, I did. I had the very first time. My mother never read to me. You know? We never had books in the house. I was never read to. And this very wonderful woman read me a book.
I'll read you a book.
Well, it may be your book. We're at the end of the show. So, again, A Slumber Party from Hell, how do they get that book and how do they get in touch with you?
They can go to ginasteam@hotmail.com to get in touch with me, ginasteam@hotmail.com. The book, The Slumber Party from Hell, is available at amazon.com or at Borders. You got it at Borders.
Mm-hmm.
Or at inkwellproductions.com, my publisher. And that's, I'd love to, I have a blog, SueEllenAllen.com, and if they read my blog, they can make comments on the blog. And the interesting thing on my Facebook page, I just asked, I said I was going to be on this show, and I said, we're going to be talking about second chances. And what do you think? Do people deserve a second chance? I got more responses than I gotten on any
good
other
ones. Good ones? Right? Did you get good ones?
I got good ones, yeah.
Oh, good.
But I only know good people.
Everybody deserves a second chance. And I always thought that was what incarceration was about, and then we would forgive, but we seem to not want to. You are very inspirational.
I'm very proud
of you. I'm inspired by you.
And you're a blessing. You really are.
Thank
you, Sue Ellen. Allen, for being our guest today, author of Slumber Party from Hell. Leanne, always a pleasure to see you. Craig Dean, nice to see
you. And that reader was Leanne, by the way.
Oh,
there we go. And we'll be back tomorrow, of course, with The Bottom Line and the Green Roundtable. Everyone have a great day. Once again, thank you, Sue Ellen Allen.
Thank you.
It's been a real honor and a pleasure. And we'll be back tomorrow.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.